The following is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University.
Okay, we're going to get started. So we're being podcast, like I said, for the folks that can attend, so I'm going to do the annoying thing of repeating your questions, but it's for the podcast. For those of you that don't know, my name is Claire Raj. I'm with the Office of Career and Professional Development. I think I've met a lot of you. So that's great. And Rachel Shumate is alum of this school. She graduated in 2007, and she is a legislative attorney at the Legislative Reference Division at the Office of Management and Budget of the Executive Office of the President. And I, of course, couldn't fit that all on her.
The first thing about any government job is you're going to have like 5,000
So Rachel and I were going to give you a brief overview of PMF. Please ask questions as we sort of go through the slides. And the slides are going to sort of just be back up. And Rachel, unfortunately, she's obviously a PMF, and was one of the folks last year who was sort of the guinea pig through the first process of the standardized assessment test, which you all may be taking as well. So I'm sure you'll have a lot of questions for her regarding that. Okay, so quick overview. We're talking about PMF. What is PMF? PMF is the Government Recruitment Program, and the important thing to remember is that it's a recruitment program to try to attract graduate students into leadership and management positions. So that's sort of their tagline. It's not sort of just like regular staff attorney positions or attorney positions at all. Like positions from all different types of graduate schools, and they're trying to recruit folks that will stay long term in the federal government. And sort of like I said, it's all graduate students, not just law. So that's an important thing to remember. I think hopefully Rachel can touch on that in a second. It's a two-year program, full-time, and after those 2 years, you should, for all of your purposes, you should be then invited to stay on in a full-time position.
I would just like to say something about that. I was a little bit taken aback by the whole idea of, oh, this is just a two-year fellowship, that's kind of strange, I'm going to take a full-time job, I'm going to be a lawyer. And it really depends on which agency you go to, how you're treated. Most agencies, they're just going to use the PMF program as a really quick, easy way to hire good people. And then once you're in, you're in. And you're not going to be treated any differently. You're not going to be, you're not going to be evaluated any differently. You're just going to be a full-time employee. And at the end of the 2 years, you're going to get a raise, essentially, is what happens. Whereas most people have to compete for that raise, you're just going to get it. The other way that it's a little bit different is that you have access to a lot of training and budget options that other people in your agency don't have. But for the most part, don't be sort of scared about that fellowship idea. You're going to be a normal employee like everybody else.
Well, that's a really wonderful segment. Because Rachel sort of mentioned that the differences, I guess, are that it's a door into the federal government, so it's a sort of more focused group of people that they're trying to recruit. Secondly, there's this rotation opportunity, and you can also transfer sort of into full-time employment after that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the rotation opportunities. I'm not sure that you've had the opportunity yet since you just started this year, but do you think that's a valuable opportunity, or what's that about?
Actually, I started the PMF with the idea that when I interviewed for the job that I currently have, my boss was kind of like, rotations don't really work here. Basically telling me that she didn't want me to do a rotation. And I was okay with that because I used my time in law school to intern at a lot of different places that I thought I was interested in. So once I decided on a job, I was really okay with staying there. But then we later found out that as a PMF, you have to do a rotation. It's a requirement. So it's actually a pretty cool opportunity. You don't have to do it within the executive branch. You don't have to do it within the government. Go to a nonprofit, you can go to the Hill, you can go to an agency that you never thought you might be interested in working in. So I probably won't do a rotation until next year. I'm still trying to sort of figure out how to do my job. A lot of more national security sensitive type of jobs, if you work for DOD or the State Department, they like you to do two rotations. They like you to do a rotation really soon after you start while you're waiting to get your clearance, because you can't really do your job until you have your clearance, and that usually takes about 6 months. So usually they'll say, you know, why don't you do a rotation now? And then when you come back, you'll be able to do your job instead of playing solitaire for 6 months. And then people in those kind of jobs usually do another rotation about a year after they get cleared. You know, that's more of a career building opportunity. So rotations are really cool. There's a lot of ways you can do them, a lot of places you can go. And depending on the flexibility of your agency, you can do more than one. And the time really varies. The really great thing about it is that you can really go anywhere you want to go because you are free labor. I mean, if you have always wanted to work for, I don't know, the National Organization of Women, but they pay something terrible, like, you know, they pay starting attorneys like $24,000 a year, and you can't live on that in D.C., you go work for, you know, HHS as a PMS, and then you can go work at NOW for 6 months for free because HHS is still paying your salary. So that is a cool opportunity that the PMS offers that you're probably not going to find anywhere else.
And speaking of salaries, PMS generally start somewhere between a GS-9 and a GS-13. Well, I guess a GS-12, and you can be promoted up to a GS-13 while you're still a PMS. The attorneys generally in the government usually start at a GS-11. It varies by agency, but that's sort of your entry-level attorney position. So sometimes PMS will start slightly lower. So I wanted to definitely ask Rachel about that, but first I wanted to tell you what the scale were. A GS-9 in D.C. is $46,000, a GS-11 is $55,000, GS-12 is $56,000. So what I heard from last year's class is that a lot of them had to negotiate from a GS-9 up to a GS-11, and a lot of them were able to do that successfully. Do you have any take on that, Rachel? Did you do that?
First of all, those numbers are going to go up by 3% in January.
That's
very exciting. Secondly, I basically just went into it in that I wasn't interested in starting at a 9. I told them I had a law degree, they should hire me at an 11. And most of the agencies that I talked to were totally okay with that. Some agencies state most famously, like, refuses to hire PMS above a 9-1. That's just their rule. They can get a lot of people, they have a lot of applicants, they can do that, and that's their deal. If you are interested in, you know, making more money, it's wise to go to an agency that has a bigger budget and that is more willing to be flexible. But basically, as a first-year lawyer, you can get an 11 with no problem in the government. If you want any more than that, you have to show them that you have experience. And that can be any kind of experience. I mean, I added up all the time on my resume from, you know, when I was interning during law school, and it bumped me up a couple of steps. So that's how that works after that. It just depends on, you know, if you worked for 5 years before you went to law school, you probably have a pretty good chance starting much higher up on the scale.
Great. Questions so far? Other program components, there is an 80-hour requirement of formal classroom training. There are, like you said, the developmental opportunities, and there's a PMS hour. Have you done any of the training at the 80 hours or the 24-hour 24 orientation?
I haven't done any training yet. I am planning on going to the orientation, which is like a 30-day, I think I have 100 of those courts, on the team building and such feeling activities in West Virginia. You have to go. It's offered, I think, 4 or 5 weekends a year. In terms of training, that again depends on your agency. Some agencies are going to follow you around, play a notepad, and make sure that every single person that's training is accounted for. Other agencies are going to say, okay, you know, go to this kind of training, you'll set out a training plan with your boss when you first start, and then at the end of your 2 years, they'll design you off, you know, for a few hours short, it's not that big of a deal. But again, that's kind of.
And the other thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of the training is not sort of specific to your agency, it's more of this, like, leadership and skills building training.
Well, right? The federal government offers thousands of training courses, and you basically, you can go to any of them.
Okay.
You develop a training plan with your boss, and you say, I'm really interested in going to these trainings, and they say, okay, that's great, we also would like you to go to this training, you know, that will benefit you in your job. But, yeah, it's really open. You can go to, I mean, you can take a language class and have it counted training.
Okay. Great. Okay. Other components, you get obviously full benefits, and there's also an LRAP component, which is not guaranteed. It depends on your agency. I think there's no air conditioning in here today. It feels really hot. Okay. So stages of PMS. First of
first you,
the LF thing, I mean, talked to some friends that have done it, and some have gotten, like, you know, $4,000 a year off their loans, others have gotten, like, $9,000. Is there any, like, you know, is there any meaning to it?
It totally depends on your agency, it totally depends on their budget, how much money they allocate to that. A lot of agencies will have additional awards in addition to, like, the LRAP program. They'll have grants that everyone can apply for during the year that usually range from, like, $2,500 to $25,000. The only thing that's a little bit precarious about the loan retainer program is that it can keep you down in terms of salary. Depending on where you're starting, at what salary level you're starting at, you kind of need to look at how much more you're making per year versus how much money you could get through the loan repayment. So, I mean, a lot of agencies, they'll say, okay, we'll give you a loan repayment, but you only start at a 9-1. And if you could potentially start as an 11-5, that difference doesn't make up. So, you kind of need to be aware of what you're giving up in order to participate in the loan repayment program.
And the other thing is, if you want to sort of try to guesstimate what different agencies are spending on LRAP, there's a really great report that was put out by CRS, the Congressional Research Service, and it's available on their website. And it was a sort of 2006-2007 assessment of how much money different agencies were putting in LRAP.
Well, another thing I want to mention about the benefits, which applies across the federal government, is that almost everything that you do pay in premiums goes out of your paycheck before taxes, and there's a lot of other things that you pay for before taxes, and, like, you get all of your Metro cards for free. So, I mean, there's a lot of other benefits that you wouldn't necessarily think of that you end up making a larger percentage of your actual base salary than you would if you went into, say, like, the private sector, because a lot of stuff comes out before taxes.
Okay, so application process. So they're basically, these are the sort of very broad stages. You apply online. Applications are not available yet. We'll get to the timeline in a second. You have to be nominated by the school. If you are nominated, you are then invited to take that structured assessment that we talked about for a second. And if you score highly enough on the assessment, then you are called a fellow and invited to a job fair. That's sort of very broad, and we'll get into a little more detail. Okay, who is eligible, hopefully, most of you guys are, you have to be graduating this academic year, basically, from a graduate degree program. And it has to be from qualified for which we are. You can only apply for it once per sort of school, so only once through WCL. And again, you have to be nominated. There is a little caveat for international students. They are eligible to apply, but I would say that you really want to be careful about checking to see what agencies have citizenship requirements, because there are a lot of federal agencies that do have citizenship requirements. And then there's also this big third thing that after the two-year fellowship, you must become a U.S. citizen, which is sort of a very large requirement.
The one thing about the whole you can do this once is just do a one-time chance. And you guys are all in a great position. You live in D.C. It's really easy to go take the assessment. It's really easy to apply. I mean, why not? I was very hesitant about applying for CMF. I thought that all the jobs available were going to be not lawyerly kind of jobs that I wasn't interested in. And finally someone convinced me, you know, you get to do this, you know, one shot at it. You might regret it if you don't do it. So I would just really encourage all of you, even if you're kind of on the fence, it doesn't really require that much effort of putting yourself out there to apply. So I would really do it. You only get one shot.
Are we paying you?
No.
Okay. So the deadline has not yet been released by the federal government. That means the application is not yet they originally said early September, and now they're projecting late October, early November, which we're sort of approaching very quickly, late October. I just checked this morning, and it's still not up. So as soon as it is up, it should be posted on the TMF website, which is available there. And they will also post it on USA Jobs, but I would go to the TMF website. And you'll see it. There's a how to apply link. You just click on that. They're going to post the application right on that website. As Rachel said, from what I know, the application process, the original process of just entering your information and demographic information, is really pretty basic.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, at this I think they all have a PowerPoint presentation. On the bottom slide on this page, it sort of says, like, what you need to apply. You know, if you think you're going to apply, start working on that though now. I know that when you're in law school, especially third year, things come up really fast and things slip through the cracks. Once they post the application, it's only open for like 10 days or 2 weeks, a very short amount of time, which I don't really understand. I think it's because they can't get their act together to get it up fast enough. So, you know, all you need is a resume and like a two-paragraph statement describing your interest in public service. I mean, that is something that you can work on while you're, you know, sitting in an admin or whatever. So if you just have that ready to go, it'll really make your life a lot easier once they do post it, because it's going to be a pretty tight deadline.
I'm going to go to that slide. I think that's really more impressive. So it's exactly what Rachel was saying, that you need the nomination form, and this is sort of the thing that sort of threw people off last year. When you apply online, after you click submit, there will be a nomination form that automatically prints out. That form has some sort of encoding that they use when they're compiling all your applications, so we need that form. And then what happens is you bring that form along with a resume, no longer than two pages, and a personal statement. The personal statement is really what Rachel said. It's about like two paragraphs. I don't want more than a page. I really don't. And you know, the reason is they used to have a cap on how many people that could be nominated from each school, and then they got rid of the cap. So our feeling at this school is really that as long as you're showing and demonstrating commitment to public service, we're really not going to try to hold you back from sitting for the assessment. It's sort of your job to either sink or swim during that assessment, and I'm not here to prevent you from taking the assessment. So, but we do have to look at sort of preliminary things to nominate you. And,
so that personal statement, sorry to interrupt, that personal statement is not something that's going to be looked at by the...
No, that personal statement is not something that's looked at by the PMS people. All that's looked at by them is this written assessment.
Well, that's not technically true. But when you fill out the application online, it is sort of, you don't have a place to like attach your resume, but it sort of asks you to fill in resume things. It asks you for all of your work experience and your school experience. So you're basically giving them a resume, essentially, before the assessment.
Yes.
Right. Is that resume like a resume that you build on USA Jobs?
Or it's similar to that, okay. But you have to do it separately.
Okay, so you don't need
to. But it's really similar to the way you do it on USA Jobs.
Okay.
And apparently this year they actually are trying to be able to let you use that resume for other USA Job applications so that you don't have to create that USA Jobs resume twice.
Okay.
Right. And what, I guess, to answer your question a little more directly, that actual piece of paper that you write the personal statement on, that you attach and you bring with your nomination form, I do not submit that personal statement to PMF. All I submit to PMF is the nomination form. But everything you enter online will be. Okay, so what are we looking for in nominations? This is what the government tells us to look for. Interest in government service, breadth and quality of accomplishment, and capacity for leadership. So those are the things that you should sort of keep in your mind when you're submitting your resume. Through the online process, and also when you're drafting your personal statement. All right, the assessment, yes. This is due. This is what Rachel's class is the first group of students that sat for this assessment. What happened was, there used to be a much, more involved assessment process where you had to go through an interview process with a panel of PMS or government folks. They cut that out completely. It's completely objective now. It's basically a Scantron, you know, sort of multiple choice exam. There is a little bit of writing, is that right?
No.
Okay. I heard that they might be introducing a little bit of writing. I don't know. But it's not, but that part's certainly not the part that's rated. So the pen and pencil assessment, I don't know what that means. The assessment centers will be available in D.C., basically. You're going to be taking yours around this area.
Is that like 18th and L or something like that? It's downtown.
And again, the government is saying that this assessment tests for analytical problem solving, selected OPM competencies, which can be found on their website, and written communication.
There's three parts. There's actually four parts of the test, but one is four. So there's three parts of the test.
Right.
Analytical problem solving is exactly like the logical reasoning part on the LSAT, not the games part, the other part. Except for like for kindergartners. This year they got so many lawyers they had no idea what to do with them. It's like because you made the assessment be like the LSAT for kindergartners. I mean, it is so easy you guys would be laughing at it. It's like, it's the best, really. And even people who hadn't gone to law school were like, that's the easiest stuff I've ever taken in my life. The written communication part is basically like, I don't know, it's similar to the reading comprehension part. Actually, never mind. It's similar to, like, I don't know if any of you guys took, like, the writing SAT, too. It's similar to that. It's like they give you all of these really badly written passages, and then they ask you a bunch of questions about how you fix them to make them better. It's basic grammar stuff. It's not anything to worry about. And then the middle section is by far the longest and most heavily weighted portion of the test, and it's basically a personality test. They ask you about 20 times, you know, how you feel about the color red, how you feel about the color blue, you know, what makes you feel bad.
Did you do good in math? Right.
Yeah, like how your high school teachers would describe you. It is completely a personality test. And I am 90% convinced that that is the part that gets you in the CMS finalist or not. I mean, everyone in the CMS for sure has the exact same personality. I mean, it was all of them, like, very outgoing, you know, very nice, like, social people who all wanted to, like, go around and start conversations and make happy hour dates. Right? It was very funny. But so, really, it's like a big personality test, and really, please don't be scared of the assessment. A lot of my friends wanted to study for it, were really nervous about it. It's very informal, you know, you go in, you can bring coffee, you can talk to other people. It's a very informal testing environment, and it's also, it's a really easy test. You sit down, you do the best you can, and that's it.
Did you prepare for it in any way, or would you recommend preparing for it in any way? Is there a way to prepare?
There isn't a way to prepare for it. I mean, if you want to, you know, if you want to think about how you would answer, you know, if you're a really introverted person and you really want to be a CMS and you want to think about how you would answer questions in a more, like, extroverted way, I'll show you the best training you can do for the test. But it's really a very easy test. If you guys all did well enough on LSAT to get into law school, you will be just fine.
And that's sort of what we've universally heard, is that you can't prepare for it. It's not a type of assessment that you can prepare for. They do, however, release questions, like sample questions, on their website, sort of closer to your specialty.
We didn't have those.
No, I think actually there were. They
didn't
have them, yeah.
I didn't look at
them. The other thing I have to say is that we went to a PMS stakeholders meeting, basically all law school that were participating, all schools that participated in PMS that were interested in learning about the assessment, went at the beginning of this year to sort of see how last class did. And I have to say that there were a lot of complaints from schools saying that their students felt like this assessment wasn't assessing anything that they could understand. They didn't understand why they were asking questions like, how well did you do in math, and, you know, what's your color? And people were really frustrated because, particularly at some schools, you know, PMF process, some students go to school thinking that this is what they want to do. They want to be a PMF. And if you tell them there's no way to study for it and we're really not sure why some people do well and why some people don't, you know, it's a very difficult thing because they're sort of hoping to really become a fellow, and there's no guarantee that you're going to do well on this assessment. And I don't even know what well means. It's just score highly enough on the assessment. So that, to me, is the biggest problem, is I really can't tell you how to do well on this assessment. You just have to sit for it and see how it goes.
And, you know, that being said, I knew a few people who were perfect candidates for government service. This is all they ever wanted to do. This is why they went to grad school, and they didn't get the DMS. And there's, like, really no explanation for it. I mean, it's sort of like when you're applying to law school or college and you're kind of like, I don't know why I didn't get into that school, but I did get into this school. And it's better if you just don't think about it too much and you just say, I'm going to apply, and if I get in, that's great, and if I don't, I'm a smart person, I'm going to swap with other options. Because it's totally comprehensible.
And they had the people that wrote the exam, the psychologists that wrote the exam there, and they were trying to sort of explain some things, but none of it really made much sense. Anyway, we'll see if they stick with it. Okay, so what happens then? They rank you based on your scores, and they announce whether or not you scored highly enough. And there's also a veterans reference as well. And they announce that in around February. You sit for the assessment in January-ish. But again, deadlines are not even out. I mean, applications aren't available yet. So yes. They will notify you directly. So I won't know. You'll know before I know. So don't email me and ask me if you made it, because I won't know. You'll know.
And usually the way they do it, or the way they did it last year, is they don't even send you an email saying you've been selected. They just send you an email saying, you know, the finalists that are posted on the website, so you have to go and find the information on there.
This is the other big thing I wanted we just sort of touch on it. What happens next is that if you are a finalist, you're invited to a job fair. The job fair last year occurred in March?
First in April.
April, okay. And this year they're projecting spring, so March, April. That's another difficult thing about this process is you guys will probably be applying for other things during this time, and just, you know, it's a long time to wait to determine whether or not this will come through. So, what ends up happening is you're invited to a job fair, you have access to these listings, and you have 12 months from the date where you are a finalist to secure a PMF position. And if you want to talk a little bit about the job fair and how you handle that, that'd be great.
Okay. If the application is sort of really easy and the test is pretty easy, the job fair is the really hard part. A lot of people who become PMF finalists, don't get jobs at the job fair. And I don't really know why that is. I think it's a combination of a lot of factors, but the job fair is rough. It's a lot of people all trying to compete for a fairly small number of jobs. I mean, I think there really are a lot of jobs, but a lot of them are in things that no one's interested in. You'll find when you go to the job fair, which is basically just like the entire Washington Convention Center set up with rows and rows of tables from agencies. And then they have all these weird, like, curtained off interview booths in the back because you interview right there. Like, you walk up to a table and you hand them your resume and they say, oh, okay, we'd like to interview you. And then you go right then and interview. It's sort of a weird process. But there are some agencies that are begging people to come work for them. I mean, the sort of famous example from last year was the U.S. Mint wanted to hire people for marketing jobs. And they, you know, they were willing to hire anyone who would come work for them at, like, a GM12. And so some people did that, and they're having a great time selling coins, but, you know, that's not really what people are for. And then there are a lot of other agencies. Like, I know that people who are interested in foreign relations, it can be really hard to get foreign relations jobs at State or at DOD or at Treasury or wherever else you can find foreign relations jobs. Those are really hard to get because you're competing with a lot of people from foreign policy master programs. However, you guys have the best benefit, which is that everyone wants to hire you if you have a law degree. I was offered jobs that I'm sure I was not qualified for, that involved very complicated budget things that really scared me. But these agencies really, really want to have lots of people with law degrees. So if you can walk up and show that you have a law degree and you, you know, have some experience, it's pretty easy to get a job. But the overall process can be very difficult because agencies aren't hiring, agencies are vague about whether or not they're hiring, they're vague about their timelines. And it can be very, very confusing. So Claire mentioned that once the finalists are sort of selected, we're going to have another one of these lovely lunch sit-downs to talk about how
more about the lunch. I'm sorry. That's
more detail about how this process actually works. And I think that that will be more relevant and much more helpful to you then. But for now, like, just be aware that this is sort of a stressful process, but that it all works out in the end. The great thing about it is people who are smart really take advantage of the online resources to see what kind of jobs are out there and sort of set up interviews before the job fair. And that's sort of the one piece of advice I can leave you on, is that if you can set up an interview before the job fair at the person's office, you have a much better chance of getting a job than if you have, like, a 10-minute interview in, you know, at the job fair when they're interviewing 200 other people.
And just two things. One, exactly what we were just saying, just to reiterate, you are selected as a finalist. You definitely, now we have sort of a little small little group of folks that went through this process last year, and we outreached to the class before that and identified some of those people who were still in the DC area and are very, very willing to help this year's class trying to figure out how to navigate the process. Secondly, one thing that we didn't really touch on is that I mentioned that this is for all graduate degree programs. So one of the big things for this year's class or last year's class is that once you get these job postings, you're not going to find all these sort of attorney advisor positions listed. In fact,
there are very, very, very few attorney positions listed as PMF jobs. If you want to be a PMF, you have to know that you have to be the type of person who went to law school knowing that you weren't going to be a lawyer, meaning you weren't going to be, like, in a courtroom. What I do is an attorney position. But it wasn't listed as an attorney position because I don't do what the government defines as legal work. I do legislative work. And the government doesn't define that as, like, as an actual lawyer position in the way that they define it if you work at DOJ.
So do people have questions about that? I wanted to mention that there was one person last year who was able to manage to get a position as an attorney at the IRS. Mm-hmm. And so, but she definitely negotiated heavily for that position, and they really wanted her to.
The other thing that happened with her, and this was interesting, is that all the agencies have access to the resumes of every single person who's a CMS finalist. So they do their own search, and they come seek you out as well. Like, we showed up on the first day of the job there, and there was this huge piece of paper on the bulletin board when we first walked into the convention center that said this girl's name, and said, please visit the IRS table first thing. I mean, like, they were on the lookout for her. They looked at her resume, they wanted her, and, like, they... Yeah, like, they worked hard for her, and they, you know, they paid her a lot of money, and they gave her what she wanted in terms of the title. So, you know, be aware of the fact that once you're a PMF finalist, like, you're wanted. You're the cream of the crop, you know? They're looking for you. So, it's not just, okay, you have to go slog through this huge job there and beg people to get you to give you a job. If you, you know, if you're smart and you have, you know, good background and stuff, they're gonna come looking for you.
One other common question is, can you take a clerkship? Can you defer for a clerkship and come back? The general answer is no. But there are caveats, so you can sort of work that out and we can talk about it if you get to that stage or sort of consider something else. But generally, if you, they sometimes will let you do that for something like a clerkship. They most likely, almost 99% sure, will not say, go ahead and work at a big firm and then come to the government after a year at the PMF. So there are things that they might make exceptions for. And there are also things like if you are taking a year for childcare or something and then want to start your search in a year later.
The trick is that they say you can take it within 12 months, mm-hmm. but the problem is that that's 12 months from the day that you become a finalist, not 12 months from the job fair. So you wouldn't have the opportunity to go to the next year's job fair. You're sort of pushed out of that.
Okay. All right, PA, this is so horrible. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to push this as much as possible, but you guys definitely want the information. The problem is I can't give you exact dates. So these are our estimates. Estimated dates, again, because the application has not yet been released by the government. So, available, late October, early November. My best advice is to keep checking. You know what? Actually, I'm going to send around a list. If you could just write your name and email address, I'll make sure that you guys are all on my listserv so that as soon as I get any sort of updates or notices, I'll shoot an email out to everyone here.
One thing I want to mention, because Claire mentioned a minute ago that it can be frustrating because you're probably already going to be applying for other things by the time that this all rolls around. One thing that's really, really nice about the CMF process is you could find out the same day that you interviewed it if they want to offer you a job. It happens very, very, very quickly. The longest I went between, you know, telling an agency I was interested in their opening to being given an offer was 4 days. So that's one good thing to know is that if it's, you know, the beginning of April and you can push off someone else that you have an offer for another week, you'll know by the end of that week whether you've been offered a PMF job you're interested in. And there continue to be PMF openings throughout the summer and the fall if you, you know, don't find anything you're interested in or if you want to, you know, go back, something else falls through. But the good thing is that the hiring process happens very, very quickly. You don't have to stress through it.
Important point. And sort of, I think Rachel mentioned, the application is only open for a very short time, so that's why it's important to know when it becomes available. And I think it's around 2 weeks. It might have been like almost 3 weeks last year, but let's pretend that it's going to be two so that we're prepared. It's definitely going to be at least two. Then what happens is after that application process closes, we, being the schools involved, are given another timeline of about a week or 2 weeks to nominate the students we want nominated. So after the nomination deadline passes, I will email all the students that were nominated and say you were nominated. At which point, you will then be contacted directly by, again, the PMS program office and not by our office at the school, but you'll be contacted by them about the assessment and what it is and where you fit for it and that sort of thing. And that happened last year in January.
Yeah. Oh, a really, really, really important thing is all these emails that you get from them come from a really weird email address. And a lot of people miss their notification because of their spam. So if you're applying for the PMS, like, make sure you're checking your spam regularly. The email address is really weird.
That's horrible.
Yeah, you would never know by looking at it in your inbox that that's what it was.
Okay. Well, very important point. Thanks. Okay, so then you fit for the assessment and you're notified around February of whether or not you scored highly enough to be invited to the job fair, which occurs in March or April-ish. And then you have that year to locate a place. So, questions? see what else there. Oh, PMF locations. They list all these locations, but I do have to say that DC has, you know, far more opportunities available than any other location. And there were some students last year who were looking in New York and Boston, the Boston area, and had a really hard time finding a PMF position there. It's something to think about. I am available to you for questions at any point. Shoot me an email. Email, I guess, my preferred communication. Any other questions for Rachel while she's here, or me? Yes.
On the application, so do we send it by mail? Do we submit it by email? Do we have to go downtown?
I want everything in hard copy. So, because my spam is a little bit crazy too, and I just don't want to miss anything. So, please bring everything in hard copy form to the front desk at OCP. I'll have a folder and just collect it. I won't even look at them until the deadline. And then
I'm actually doing that thing online.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, the actual thing on
the phone.
Yeah,
I didn't get them.
I will make copies of them and have them at the OCPD office. We're also going to put them online, hopefully on the document library.
Also, I know I'm all frustrated with the OCPD, especially as you get farther down into it. So if anyone's interested in my contact information, stop by. I'll meet with you. I'm more than happy to have you call me or email me with questions.
And please make sure you sign that sheet that's going around before you leave so that I can get you on the list. And I just want to thank Rachel so much for taking time every day. And she's, like I said, she's very willing to